I thought I'd share with you something that I got as an email. This was something about moms and what somebody doesn't know about what moms do. Somebody said that it takes about 6 weeks for a mom to get back to normal after they've given birth to a child. That someone, according to the email, doesn't know that nothing returns back to normal after you've become a mom. Someone once said that being a mother is incredibly boring. That someone, they've never taken their child who's crabby, their child who hasn't taken a nap to a mall in the middle of the afternoon and tried to keep up with their child. Someone once said that if you're a good mother, your child will turn out good. And that someone thinks that having children comes with a set of directions and with a set of guarantees. And here's the last one that I appreciated. Someone once said that a good mother never raises their voice at their child. But that someone's never been with their kid when their kid's getting ready to hit a golf ball through your living room window. So this morning, I'll just say this about moms. Moms, thank you very much for all the work that you do and all the work that you've done. And this morning, Mother's Day, I picked a passage which very much is very related to Mother's Day, 1 Samuel chapter 1. And there's a number of sermons that you could hear or could look at which focus on good qualities that show themselves up in Hannah, as we see here in Samuel. But my thoughts as I was looking at this wasn't that this would be a passage just for moms and encouragement for moms, but this would be a message this morning that would encourage all of us. And there's a number of great faith lessons from the life of Hannah that I think that we can all walk away with. I want to talk a little bit about Hannah's family, but before I do, just talk about TV shows and TV shows, how they depict families. Some of like my favorite TV shows for depicting families were like, you know, back 20 years ago, like The Cosby Show, or 10 years ago, like Home Improvement. I don't really watch any of those reality shows about like 19 or 20 kids or whatever, but I know some of you do, and those are some families that you can watch as well. And when I think about families and try to think about what families look like, what I've seen more and more is that more families look like The Simpsons than they do The Brady Bunch. I don't know if you've seen that, but that's how I've seen a lot of families. They look like The Simpsons. And The Simpsons kind of a dysfunctional family if you follow them. And dysfunctional families aren't something that is immune from the Bible. If you go and you look at Hannah's family here, which we're going to see in just a minute, her family is very much a dysfunctional family. And in the midst of that, God does this incredible work in her life. Let me tell you a little bit about Hannah's family. Hannah's family, their story takes place about 5 miles north of Jerusalem. And her husband's name is Elkanah, which is very much a strange name. And Elkanah's married to Hannah, and he's also married to another woman by the name of Peninnah. And Peninnah has kids, but Elkanah and Hannah don't have kids. And that was just the tip of the iceberg for this family, kind of a strange family. And you think, what was Elkanah doing thinking that he could marry two women? What was he crazy? But that was an acceptable thing for him to do back in those days, and for two reasons in particular. One, if he could afford to have two wives, that would be an acceptable thing that he could do. And two, if his first wife was not able to have children, he was allowed to go get a second wife so that he could have children. And having children, that was an important thing back in the day. It's an important thing for many of us still. But it was important not only because he wanted to have his family lineage continue on. It was important not only because he loved having kids. It was important because, you know, he needed his children to do work with him. He needed to take them to work. If he was working in the fields, whatever he was doing, he needed to have children to be able to assist him in that task. This family that we're looking at, this family of Hannah and the rest of their clan, this family is just an incredibly dysfunctional family. And if they had family counselors back in these days, a family counselor would have just had a field day working with this family. And here's the root of the dysfunction. Hannah, we already mentioned, she can't have kids. But the other wife, Peninnah, she can. She has kids. And she beats Hannah up over the fact that she can't have kids. And she makes Hannah feel incredibly small over that fact. When I thought about families that can't have children, I've got some friends, they can't have their own children. And as I thought about that, I recognized that I've hoped that I've been incredibly sensitive to anyone who's been in that situation. And if you ever want to just
rip someone apart. That's definitely an issue that you could go after, to rip someone apart. And that's what Paniah is doing to Hannah. She's just ripping her apart. She's making her feel incredibly small, making her feel like she doesn't matter, like she's just this insignificant person. There's a couple places in 1 Samuel chapter 1 where Hannah, where she shows herself as being one who's really distressed. She's depressed, and she's got these thoughts over the fact that she can't have children. And having children back in these days, people saw the fact that you had children. That was a sign that God had blessed you, that God had given you His favor. And if you didn't have children, people saw that as God extending His judgment upon you. And if a woman didn't have children, her status in her community, she was looked down as less. And often a woman was considered awkward or was considered to be discarded or ostracized, or was made to feel like she was of no value because she couldn't have children. Now, I try to share with you that Paniah is a source of some of the chaos that goes on inside this family, but she's not the only one. And if you go to verse 8 of chapter 1, I see it that her husband is part of the problem. Here's verse 8. Elkanah, Hannah's husband, he would say to her, "Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons?" As I look at this Elkanah here, and maybe you hear this differently, but as I look at him, he just shows himself as not the smartest of husbands. He's not the most sensitive of men. And he says things to Hannah like, "Hannah, why are you crying? Hannah, come on, this isn't such a big deal. Hannah, go eat something. Come on, everyone knows that if you eat something, that'll make you feel better. Hannah, you've got me. You don't need 10 sons." And as he says these things to his wife to try to make her feel better, I think he shows himself to be one who's got a little bit of arrogance, maybe a little bit of ignorance, maybe a little bit of stupidity. And he's got this attitude, it seems to me, like, this isn't such a big deal, Hannah. Now, Elkanah, I don't think he deserves to get any Sensitive Husband of the Year awards. And in many ways, as you think about that, about what he's been doing, what Paniah has been doing to Hannah, you can see why she kind of has a right to have some anger, why she's got a right to be bitter, why she's got a right to be mad. And I kind of described Elkanah as not the best of husbands, but that's not the full picture of what Scripture shows about him. There's some other things that Elkanah does in chapter 1 that really do impress us about this guy, that he isn't such a bad husband. And to paint a fair picture of him, I'll mention those things too. He gives his wife, Hannah, he gives her a double portion of meat to be used for sacrifice, and it says because he loved her more. And he's also a person who is serious about worship. So there are some pluses about who this man is as well. Hannah's story, though, it doesn't end in verse 8. Hannah's story, it continues throughout the book of 1 Samuel. And in the midst of her sorrow, in the midst of her sadness, what does she do? She cries out to God, and she puts her trust in God, and she wants God to act mightily on her behalf. So if you have your Bibles open to chapter 1, we're going to read right now verses 9 to 20. "Once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. And she made a vow saying, 'O Lord Almighty, if you would only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head.' As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart, and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. Eli thought she was drunk and said to her, 'How long will you keep on getting drunk? Get rid of your wine.' 'Not so, my Lord,' Hannah replied. 'I am a woman who is deeply troubled. I have not been drinking wine or beer. I was pouring out my soul to the Lord. Do not take your servant for a wicked woman. I have been praying here out of my great anguish and grief.' Eli answered, 'Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him.' She said, 'May your servant find favor in your eyes.' Then she went on her way and ate something, and her face was no longer downcast. Early the next morning, they arose and worshiped before the Lord, and then went back to the home at Ramah. Elkanah lay with his wife Hannah, and the Lord remembered her. So in the course of time, Hannah conceived and gave birth to a son. And she named him Samuel, saying, 'Because I asked the Lord for him.'" Hannah, her story of faith can teach us a lot about depending upon God, about depending upon God in the midst of what seems to be the most awful of circumstances. And verse 9 of our passage, which we started out, and it takes us to the scene in which Hannah, she's just finished this meal, and she's going to go to the temple and she's going to pray. And when she gets to the temple, she finds Eli, the great priest. He's there at the temple. He's waiting to greet people as they enter in. But the passage tells us that Eli was sitting down. And that little fact, that tells us that Eli was older in age, because normally he would have been standing to welcome people as they came into the temple. And then Hannah, she goes inside and she prays. And as she prays, she lets every emotion that she's had inside of her out. She's had all this anger, all this frustration just building up inside of her for some time. She's had her husband sometimes not understanding who she is and what's going on inside of her. She's had his other wife literally beating her up about the fact that she can't have a child. And then our Bible says that in the bitterness of her soul, that she cries out, that she weeps, and she prays to God. And in that prayer, she lays it all out before God. She cries out and she says to God, "Please don't forget me." And she says those words because that's exactly how she felt. She felt all alone. She's in the middle of this family that just doesn't give her value. She's in this middle of this family and she feels all alone. And then she prays. And this prayer that she prays, this isn't a prayer that she hasn't thought about. She has given some thought to the words of this prayer. She prays specifically for a son. She doesn't just pray for a child. She prays for a son. And in her prayer, she is incredibly honest. She bears her heart to God and she tells God everything that she's been feeling, every thought, every uncertainty, every doubt that she's had. She lays it all out before God and she asks God to act. At home with Ella, we've been trying to teach her to pray. And she doesn't have this huge vocabulary, but here's kind of like a sample of what our prayer time with Ella is. We coach her, we lead her through it. We say, "Thank you." And then she says, "Thank you." We say, "Thank you, eat. Thank you, house. Thank you, slide. Thank you, mommy. Thank you, daddy." We say all these different things to say thank you for. And then I've been trying to introduce some other things that she can pray about. And we're hoping that she's kind of getting the hang of praying and getting a handle on the fact that she is praying to God. But I tell her, "Thank you, boo-boo." And she knows what a boo-boo is because she looks at my elbows and she sees my elbows are all scaly because I don't use any of that lotion stuff on my elbows, which somebody would like me to use. Sorry. And she knows what it is to have a boo-boo. So we try to tell her to say, "Thank you, boo-boo," because I want her to understand that, you know what, you can hand all these things over to God. And that's what Hannah does here. Hannah teaches us that you can pray to God about anything, that you can give everything over to God. And that's an important thing that I think that we see in Hannah. And as Hannah's praying, there's this interesting thing that happens. Eli the priest, he's watching her, and he sees her lips moving, but he doesn't hear anything coming out of her mouth. And for a little bit, he's convinced that she's drunk. And he tells her, "Get rid of the wine." And then in the course of that conversation, Hannah explains to him, "You know what? I'm not drunk. I've been pouring my soul out to God, telling God everything that's going on in my life, telling him that I can't have a son, I can't have a child." And then Eli the priest, he comes to a point where he understands exactly what she's talking about. And he gives her this word of hope. He gives her this blessing. And he points her to know that there is a future favor of God that is going to be coming to her. And this would really be the hope that Hannah needed. You ever needed a good word of hope from God? Maybe you're stressing over some sort of health issue. Maybe you're stressing over, you know, something going on at work. Maybe there's a family relationship thing. Maybe there's someone in your life that's driving you nuts. Maybe it's something in your marriage. You know, for each of those situations, God has a word of hope. He's got something for you. He's got a thought that can change your life, can change your outlook. And it's found here in His Word. And if we're not in His Word, we're totally going to miss that message of hope that God has for us. Our Bible tells us this, that after Hannah had spent some time in prayer with Eli and at the temple, that the next morning that she goes down to worship. And then after she went to worship some more, she goes home to her husband. And the two, they lie together and they conceive a child. And from that moment on, Hannah would not be known as that's the one who can't have a child. Hannah would be known as that is Hannah. She is the mother of Samuel. Hannah's story doesn't end in verse 20 as well. It keeps on going. And in the rest of the chapter, Hannah, she dedicates her son Samuel just like she promised. And she worships, she makes sacrifices, she prays, and she honors the commitment that she makes to God. And in the course of time, Samuel, he'd become this great prophet that would be used by God to establish and to maintain the kingdom. And for Hannah, she would always know from that day forward that her son was being used by God. And we can say that because his name actually means heard of God. So when she would say her son's name, she would always remember that her son, that he's being used for the purposes of God. The end of chapter 1, we hear Hannah's heart. This is what it says. It says, "I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life, he'll be given over to the Lord and worship the Lord there." Hannah's life story, I think, is just an amazing story. She comes from this incredibly dysfunctional family. And in the midst of all of that, she turns to God. And God hears her prayer and God answers her prayer. And after that, she honors the commitment that she made to God, and she gives her son over to God to be that servant that she was committed to seeing him do. The picture that I think we have of Hannah is this. Through all the ups, through all the downs, through all the joys, through all the pains, through all the hurts, through all the good things, through all of it, she is focused on God. So focused, when it comes to a point where she is called to honor her commitment, she honors her commitment. She gives her son over to God to be a Nazirite for the rest of his life. This passage, I think this is an amazing passage that teaches us some incredible lessons about faith. And as we're looking at this passage, I think there's three faith lessons that we can be challenged by. Here's the first one that I think we can be challenged by. It's that in the darkest of moments that we see a picture here of Hannah being one who points to God. That even in the midst of the most miserable of things possible, she cries out to God. And the practical connection for us is this, is that we should be encouraged to know that in all of the dark places of our life, that even then, we too, we can cry out to God. So practically, that means that God is there when we get the pink slip from our jobs telling us we don't have a job. That God is there. That means that God is there when we mess up, when relationships are broken. God is there to restore, to forgive, and to renew relationships. That means that God is there in all of our problems, even the most tragic of things that happen in our lives. God is there. And the psalmist in Psalm 119, verse 71, writes this, "It is good for me that I was afflicted, that I might learn your statutes." In the midst of all of the dark moments of our life, God wants to speak into our lives, and He wants to give us the truth. And for Hannah, in the toughest of moments in her life, it was her faith in God that was that one constant that brought her to that place that she could trust in God. So the encouragement, I think, for all of us is this, is to know that in the darkest of moments, God is there. Here's the second faith lesson that I'll make from Hannah this morning. Hannah, she's a person who pursues God in prayer. She took her prayer life very, very seriously. You look at this chapter, you look at chapter 2, the first 11 verses, especially chapter 2, the passage is just filled with a number of opportunities in which Hannah prays. And Hannah, she is serious about prayer. God's desire is that you and I, that we would be a people who depend upon Him for prayer. One of the best quotes that I ever read or heard about prayer was this, "To act without prayer is arrogance towards God, and to pray and to not act is foolishness." We're to be a people who seek God in faith, who come to God, who pour out our hearts to God in prayer. And when we pray, we talk to God, we ask God to speak to us. And it's in prayer where God moves, where God acts, and where God leads and where He guides. Think about Hannah for just a little bit more. How different would her life have been had she not prayed? How different would Samuel's life have been had she not prayed for her son to be born, to come into this world? How different would the Old Testament's history have been had Samuel not been a part of it? So the faith lesson for us is this. Be encouraged to be a people who seek God in prayer. And here's the third lesson that I'll share with you from Hannah. Hannah, she was a person who honored her commitments. Never did she bargain with God. Never did she say, "God, I'll give you this if you give me this," and then think that once God gave her what she wanted, that she would pull back her offer that she made to God. Hannah was 100% committed to do what she said that she was going to do. And in due time, that's exactly what she did. After God gave her son, she gave her son back to God. And as Hannah, as she honors her vow, she comes to realize a very important truth. This is kind of just a side point, but here's the truth. Hannah realized that her son never really was hers to begin with. And for all of us who are parents, that's something that I think we all have to be challenged to consider. That our children, everything that we have, it's not ours, it's God's. And Hannah comes to that point where she gives her kid back to God, her son back to God, knowing that her son was God's in the first place. Many people make promises to God, and then time passes and they forget their promises. That's not Hannah, though. Hannah, she is fully committed to keeping her promises, and she does just that. She gives her son back to God. Hannah's story, it teaches us a number of lessons about faith. And in Luke chapter 8, Jesus interacts with this woman who was in need of some healing. And verse 48 of Luke chapter 8 says this, "Then he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace.'" The thing that strikes me about that verse and about this whole portion that we've looked at about Hannah, it wasn't Hannah's faith that brought her to the place where she was for this woman that Jesus heals. It wasn't her faith. It wasn't optimism that was her rescue. It was faith in God, faith in Jesus Christ. And if there's anything that we can be challenged by this morning, it's to ask God to renew our faith in Him. Hannah, she's an excellent story about a person having faith and confidence in God. And I pray that would be our story as well.